Welcome to the Conservation Without Borders podcast, the show that brings you conservation with inspiration. Here's your host, Dr. Haley Adams.
Welcome to episode 17 of Conservation Without Borders. Happy holidays, guys. We are fully into the season now, the festive season, so I hope everybody's doing well and enjoying the season, the reason for the season, not getting too stressed out or overwhelmed. Today in my news, just a couple of updates. I have signed book copies available for anyone interested. So this is for my first book, Conscious Conservation. If you would like a signed copy, I can ship you one in the next few days. So just hit me up. It's Haley at drhaleyadams.com, H-A-Y-L-E-Y. Let me know you'd like a signed copy. I'll send you instructions for payment and I will get that over to you. So if you have somebody, a last minute Christmas gift you need to purchase or someone in mind who might enjoy reading this book, then be sure to get in touch with me. You can also find it on Amazon, so it's available as a paperback and also as a Kindle or ebook edition. So whatever is your preferred way to read, you can choose that. And I'm now building a course that will complement this book. So for anyone interested, that will be available later in January. So if you want to start off your new year by learning how to transform your own perspective and mindset and approach to conservation and become a conscious conservationist, we will go together through the tenets of becoming a conscious conservationist and what that looks like and sort of the work that's necessary to make that transformation. And so next week I'll talk about the book, or in the next few weeks, I should say, I may be talking next week about toxins in our environment and wildlife toxicology. But in the next few episodes, when the course is almost ready for registration, I'll talk about the book and the course and what it looks like. So for anyone interested, then I'll give you a sneak peek. And if you've purchased the book and then you want to take the course, there will be a slight discount because the book is included in the course. So if you already have the book, then that will be adjusted accordingly. So stay tuned for that. And let's see, if you're interested, if you do have last minute holiday gifts to buy and you need some inspiration, I have a blog post and a podcast. So last week's podcast, you can go check out. So that was number 16, episode 16, is all about fair trade and eco-friendly shopping and companies to support. So there is a corresponding blog post. So if you want to listen to the podcast, you can. And then if you just want to go find the links, just go to my website and click under the blog and you'll see that post there. So you can get some gift ideas and inspiration, whether for yourself or especially if you're shopping this time of year and you need to find a gift that is giving back. You know, you're not just purchasing, but your dollars are counting to help conservation. So the good news stories for the week. The first one is from African Parks, and the NGO known as African Parks has assumed the management of the first marine reserve, of their first marine reserve, and it's known as the Bazaruto Archipelago National Park in Mozambique. So they announced the signing of this 25-year agreement to restore, develop, and manage Mozambique's Bazaruto Archipelago National Park and revitalize it to become one of the leading and most productive marine protected areas in eastern Africa. So this will be the 13th park to come under African Parks management, and it's the first marine reserve within their portfolio. So this park was declared a protected area in 1971 when the unique ecological value of the park was first recognized, and it spans 143,000 hectares of seascape and includes a chain of 5 islands. 3 of these islands are permanently inhabited by approximately 5,800 people who rely heavily on the area's marine resources for subsistence and their primary livelihoods. So the park's a critical sanctuary for numerous species of marine megafauna, including dolphins, sharks, whales, whale sharks, manta rays, and turtles. And Bazaruto also harbors the last viable population of dugongs in the western Indian Ocean. The park includes a range of terrestrial and marine habitats, including coastal dunes, rocky and sandy shores, coral reefs, mangrove forests, and seagrass meadows. It sounds absolutely beautiful. These habitats provide refuge for over 180 species of birds, 45 species of reptiles, 16 species of terrestrial mammals, 500 species of marine and coastal mollusks, and 2,000 fish species, making it an important conservation area and a coveted and exceptional tourism destination. However, this marinescape is under threat due to illegal and unsustainable fishing practices, unregulated natural resource use, and uncontrolled tourism activities. So, African Park's immediate focus will be on strengthening law enforcement to mitigate the most immediate conservation threats, as well as building support for the park through community engagement. Necessary or needed infrastructure for park management will be established. Marine and terrestrial ranger patrols will be augmented in conjunction with aerial surveillance, and conservation monitoring will concentrate on key species and their habitats. They will also have local community employment that will be enhanced through hospitality training and exclusive tourism activities. They'll explore alternative livelihood opportunities, and local enterprises will be developed to aid in poverty alleviation. So about African Parks, African Parks is an NGO. It's a nonprofit conservation organization that takes on the complete responsibility for the rehabilitation and long-term management of national parks in partnership with governments and local communities. So they have the largest counter-poaching force and the most amount of area under protection for any one NGO in Africa. They manage 13 national parks and protected areas in 9 countries, covering over 7 million hectares in Benin, Central African Republic, Chad, the Democratic Republic of Congo, the Republic of Congo, Malawi, Mozambique, Rwanda, and Zambia. So for more information, you can visit their website. It's easy to remember. It's africanparks.org. And my next good news story comes out of Manga Bay, India. So just an aside, I find a lot of great articles from Manga Bay. So if you are interested in keeping up with conservation news, that's a great site to check out. So Manga Bay, that's M-O-N-G-A-B-A-Y, Manga Bay. And to back up for a second, the African Park site, also you can add your email to their newsletter and you'll be updated with what they call good news updates. So I really like seeing this anytime we can keep up with good news and conservation. It can only bring about better things. So check that out, africanparks.org and then Manga Bay. So the next story from Manga Bay, India, they are using smartphones to do tiger surveillance or to do counting of tiger population. So India's 2018 National Tiger Estimation will use an Android-based mobile application to streamline collection of field data on tigers and prey, add photos and GPS coordinates, record poaching and human-wildlife conflict, and reduce error in data entry. So this is known as the M-Stripes app, and it uploads field data automatically to a remote central server for rapid analysis, or it can store the data on the user's mobile phone until internet access is available. So that's an important point, since most of this field work will be very remote where they won't have access to internet service, for example. So the app has been tested successfully in a few tiger reserves. It's been made more user-friendly, and it's now being rolled out on a national scale. So the question they're asking is, will this help to resolve discrepancies in survey results? So their last survey was done in 2014. It was 4 years prior, and they had their numbers were challenged, basically. They were concerned about discrepancies in the way the data was collected. So the plan is to digitize these data records with the help of the Android mobile application and to eliminate the manual process of recording, which is slow and more prone to error, human error. So the Wildlife Institute of India developed the app and named it the Monitoring System for Tiger Intensive Protection and Ecological Status, and that's M-STRIPE, so a very clever acronym. So they will be taking data related to the carnivore's signs, the relative abundance of prey, habitat, and human impact in the area. And it's very user-friendly and easy for information or data management. So this app, when loaded onto an Android-based smartphone, can help forest guards collect data along with pictures and GPS coordinates. And so when a guard is at a location where there is internet connectivity, the data will be transferred automatically to their central server. But again, because it is remote, the data can be stored on the mobile phone in the meantime if they're in areas and collecting data where they don't have access to internet. So the trainers of this program will go on to train forest officials, field staff, and technical operators to use the app. And they do believe the app will help make tiger surveillance easier and quicker. And the entire national estimation of the tiger population is expected to take a year to cover the 400,000 kilometers squared of forested area in 18 states. So it's a great demonstration of the use of technology to facilitate quicker and easier data collection for looking at species abundance, for example. And it also helps to eliminate that human bias or human error, which can often be problematic when you're taking on a large surveillance project like this. Okay, let's get to my interview today. So today I'll be talking with Dr. Karen Holm, who serves as the chief veterinarian for the Wildlife Conservation Center in rural Arrington, Virginia. Karen began her education at West Virginia University, earning two bachelor degrees, one in wildlife management and the second in animal veterinary sciences. She continued on to Ross University School of Veterinary Medicine to earn her Doctor of Veterinary Medicine degree. Upon graduation, she founded and operated her own veterinary hospital and spent 14 years practicing medicine on pets, farm animals, zoo animals, and wildlife alike. When not attending to the needs of her hospital patients, Karen found time to volunteer at different zoological facilities such as the Maryland Zoo in Baltimore and the Virginia Zoo in Norfolk, learning conservation medicine of endangered species. In 2014, she decided to dedicate her life's work to conservation medicine. In preparation for her position as chief veterinarian at the Wildlife Conservation Center, she attended the University of Edinburgh to receive a postdoctorate master's of veterinary science and conservation medicine. Karen's educational endeavors incorporated extensive travel to facilities in India, such as the Sariska Tiger Reserve in Rajasthan, the Elephant Rehabilitation and Care Center, and Wildlife SOS Rehabilitation Center, both in Agra, India. She also volunteered her veterinary skills at the Cheetah Conservation Fund facility in Namibia, Africa, working in the genetics lab on various projects. Also in South Africa, she spent time with local wildlife veterinarians immobilizing rhinos for health checkups and identification as part of the anti-poaching efforts currently ongoing in Africa. Karen has since completed her dissertation project on phenotypic characteristics of individual animals for reintroductions using the rare and elusive Eastern Mountain Bongo, an African antelope in Kenya, as a model species. She plans to continue her education with a PhD in conservation genetics through George Mason University and the Smithsonian Conservation Biological Institute. Karen feels that her current veterinary duties and responsibilities at the Wildlife Conservation Center, though more demanding than clinical practice, makes a greater impact on mitigating the world's endangered species crisis and has given her the utmost personal satisfaction. Welcome to the show, Karen. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, I'm good. So I've introduced you already, but why don't you start by telling us in your own words a little bit about your background and how you got your start as a wildlife vet, as well as in conservation medicine?
Okay. Well, I've always had an affinity for wildlife and zoo species. I grew up around animals, and I grew up around the National Zoo, so we were there a lot. I started out in small animal medicine after vet school and for about 15 years. And during the last few years, I decided I wanted to pursue the zoo and wildlife field, which is the reason why I went to vet school in the beginning. So I started volunteering at Baltimore Zoo and the Wildlife Center of Virginia, and kind of created my own internships. I visited several other facilities, and I just grew from there. As far as conservation medicine, you know, I had been practicing small animal medicine for years and taking care of individuals, but I wanted to do a little bit more and take care of herd species. Mm-hmm. So for reintroductions.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Ross University.
Yeah. Okay. That's right.
In St. Kitts. Mm-hmm.
And so where's your family? I didn't realize you grew up around D.C. area.
Yeah. So I'm originally from Maryland.
Okay. We're going to be moving back to D.C. area probably in the next few months. So, but I'll probably be in Northern Virginia. But I love that area. It's just a really cool mix. There's so much to do and see, and it's such an international vibe. So I really love it there.
Yeah, definitely. You have the mountains and you have the city.
Yes. Yeah, that's nice. Okay, so can you just also explain what we mean by conservation medicine for people who might not be familiar with the term? Everybody, they know what conservation is, and we talk a lot about wildlife medicine, but conservation medicine is sort of a newer term that has been, you know, more frequently used. So why don't you talk a minute about that, and then you can tell us about your Wildlife Conservation Center and why you created that.
Sure. So conservation medicine is similar to the One Health theory. So the interface between wildlife, livestock, and human medicine. And conservation medicine deals a little bit more with the wildlife and the livestock side than the human side, as One Health does. My master's is in conservation medicine through University of Edinburgh. And it was definitely a good program. And through that, interests grew and developed the Wildlife Conservation Center here in Virginia. It's a nonprofit 501c3 where we house and create and propagate endangered species, especially of the critically endangered antelope species, which over the course of the next few years, hopefully we will participate in some reintroductions. Yeah, collaborating with several of the others.
Let me back up for a minute, because you cut out when you talked about your master's, so I want to make sure everybody gets that. So say again which program you enrolled in. So where did you go for your master's?
So I went to University of Edinburgh in Scotland. It was a master's in veterinary medicine with a concentration in conservation medicine. Mm-hmm. And it was a 3-year program. And actually I just got back from Scotland Sunday from graduation.
Oh, awesome. Oh, congratulations.
Thanks.
So how did you make the leap from, you know, going into a master's program, and you're probably just as crazy as I am, but how did you make that leap from, you know, maybe thinking about more traditional avenues for careers to, you know, pioneering your own path and creating a 501c3. So how did that come about?
Right. So, like I had said, you know, when treating on the individual level, I wanted to do a little bit more than that. I want to look at herd populations, source populations, and reintroductions, and that would really spark my interest. And there's not a lot of facilities, that need help, really, but we can always use help, and creating these centers that collaborate with local, with across the U.S. and internationally, and we wanted to do our part for that.
Mm-hmm. So at the center, you mentioned that you're working with several species of ungulates that are either critically endangered or extinct in the wild. So why don't you talk a little bit about the species you're currently focusing on, and just tell us about their history and what their current status is, and how that relates to the necessity for conservation.
Sure. So we have, right now we have three species of ungulates, the Eastern Mountain Bongo, which there's less than 100 in the wild in Kenya.
Wow.
They had a repatriation, sad situation. They had a repatriation back in 2004. I believe they reintroduced about 17 and have been doing okay. Unfortunately, unforeseen things like diseases can affect, proliferation of them, Tileria. Scimitar horned oryx is a species that is actually extinct in the wild. They just reintroduced, I believe it was around 20 in 2016, so just recently, and they're doing well. They've actually had three births since they've been there.
Oh, wow.
And then the addicts, doing great, are critically endangered as well, with less than 100. Both the bongo and the addicts both are less than 100 in the wild. And facilities like ours in White Oak, Fossil Rim, and the Smithsonian are working really hard producing these source populations for reintroductions over the next few years. In captivity for each of these species, there's somewhere between 700 and 800. And then, of course, more in private collections.
Mm-hmm.
We've had three births in the last year here of bongo, and they're doing really well.
That's good news.
We're still working on the scimitar and the addicts population. Yes, definitely.
How did you source the stock? Was it captive?
They are. They're from other captive programs. So we work, like I said, we work closely with the other like-minded facilities like ours. And also there are several ranches in Texas that participate in some of these conservation programs as well. And we are basically involved with them and creating these conservation source populations
mm-hmm.
of these species.
So, we'll talk about sort of the importance of having captive populations and how that contributes to conservation in the wild, because I think sometimes people don't make that connection very clearly. And some captive centers are probably better than others, at making that linkage.
Absolutely.
So I know there's a lot of wide variation out there, but it sounds like you have that clear connection between what you're doing in captivity and how that relates to the field. You're taking action in the field, so that's
right.
Always good to hear.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about the specifics of what you're doing. So why don't you talk about what measures you're taking in order to ensure the survival of these species? So whether that be, hands-on work in reproduction or veterinary techniques or genetics or whatever it is, just explain that a little bit more.
Sure. So, my job here at the Wildlife Conservation Center is, of course, the health and preservation of these species and the individuals that we have here. So making sure they're healthy, sometimes vaccines, certainly the births and the reproduction aspect. And then we talk about the genetics as well and making sure they're genetically diverse and, improving the genetics for the wild and maintaining the evolutionary potential of these animals as well. Luckily for us, none of them ever get sick, so there's not a whole lot of clinical work to do, but a lot of organization, emailing, meetings, and collaborations with all these other groups and looking into the relatedness and the genetic diversity of the groups that we want to work with.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of non-veterinary work, which I've had people ask me before whenever they hear I'm a veterinarian, which that's a whole other topic, is when people ask you what you do, we work in these categories that are very hard to define. So I'm always changing up my answer.
Yes.
I don't know what do you lead with? Because if you say I'm a veterinarian, there is a, sort of that quintessential picture of what a vet does. And especially if we're doing
preconceived ideas.
Yeah. One time I was considered an alternative. I had an alternative veterinary career. So I think when we're doing these alternative careers, it's really hard for people to understand the scope of and the range of activities that we're doing. But anyway, it sounds like you get to do a little bit of everything, but maybe not as much as the clinical work as you'd like. But you mentioned disease in the wild. So why don't we talk about the primary threats to the wild populations of ungulates?
As far as disease, the Bongo certainly saw several diseases. See, back in, I would say, 60s and 70s, rinderpest kind of wiped out a major portion of the population in the wild. And then after the repatriation, Tularia, tick-borne disease, unfortunately, some succumb to that as well. They're working on, of course, rinderpest is under control, but Tularia and a lot of the other tick-borne diseases, they're working on vaccines for those to prepare the captive populations for reintroductions. Mm-hmm. Of course, you can't exactly put the animals back into an area where the habitat is being destroyed, human disturbance, overgrazing, loss of land, all of these types of things. So they are working with ecologists and, on the ground, local governments and things like that to help control that before a lot more to it than just releasing a bunch of animals.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you're releasing, can I ask where have you released into private reserves or national parks?
Yeah, basically. So something where they can be monitored. So a lot of the local conservation departments and of the local governments are monitoring radio collared animals, mm-hmm. which is really nice. They're collaborating with the U.S. and a lot of the UAE and Abu Dhabi, especially with these three species of ungulates, all collaborative work there. Which is nice.
Mm-hmm. Who has gone over for the release, or how does that work for the transportation internationally?
Good question. So for the scimitar, the Smithsonian Fossil Rim played a huge part in those, and they were actually on the ground over there in Chad with the release. Bongo, since it's been so long ago, rare species out of Florida, worked closely with the Bongo Surveillance Program in Kenya and the Kenya Wildlife Service, and they were all collaborating together for the release of these animals.
Okay. Yeah, so it is a collaborative effort. I'm sure it has to be, especially when you're working between governments and all.
Exactly.
So we'll come back to Wildlife Conservation Center in a minute, but I want to shift gears and talk about your career before you got to this point, because I know a lot of the audience is interested in, you know, what they can do to contribute or how they can get their start. And like, there's really no one set way to do it. So if you ask, 20 different wildlife vets or conservationists how they got to be where they are, they all take their own, unique route. So let's talk about your experience working, because you do have a good bit of experience working as a wildlife vet internationally and with a variety of species. So how did you manage to organize some of this work? Was it through formal programs? Did you just pioneer your way? And then what advice would you have for budding conservationists or budding wildlife vets who wish to gain similar experience?
Well, I did. I created my own path. I definitely was non-traditional. After working in small animal for so long, you sort of lose touch with the quote real world. But I contacted, like I said, the Maryland Zoo and they were definitely willing to have me there volunteering the Wildlife Center of Virginia. So I got a zoo aspect and a native wildlife aspect, which was great experience. And then networking. Mm-hmm. One thing leads to another. And you can absolutely create your own path. There's not just one. Mm-hmm. You know, just stay on top of it, stay strong, and push forward. Perseverance. Yeah.
It is networking. I mean, I used to hate to think that or to sort of accept it. You know, I used to struggle with it. I didn't really understand what networking meant to me. It sounded like just superficial and something I really didn't feel like I'd be good at pursuing. But it really can be organic. It just means meeting people, you know, wherever you're willing to do the work. Get to know those people around you because everyone knows someone, and it's just like those building blocks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So tell us about some of your more memorable experiences. I mean, I looked at over your experience, and I know you've probably got some exciting stories. So what's something that stands out in your mind, either a specific case or just being out in the field somewhere that was a really incredible experience? Why don't you share that?
So I was in South Africa last spring and working with the wildlife vet out there for a week, and did a little safari, did a little work, but one of our last days there, we were able to immobilize a white rhino cow and calf for genetic sampling, microchipping, anti-poaching efforts, and that was absolutely amazing. Just, you know, the sheer size of these animals and it was just very exciting, the whole procedure. And knowing that we were contributing to something worthwhile and to help save these animals and preserve the species was incredible. In fact, when we, after immobilization, we got our samples and we had to reverse them. And it was just amazing to see mom and calf just came together. Aww. Like they were supposed to, you know. It was amazing.
Yeah.
that was definitely a memorable experience.
yeah, it sounds like it. And it's those little moments that make all the other work that you do that is not veterinary related necessarily. Absolutely. Makes it worthwhile.
Yeah, exactly.
Keeps you going.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
So
yes, definitely.
What is a typical work week like for you? I'm sure you're wearing a lot of hats. You know, when you're running a nonprofit, you do end up learning a lot of new skills. So, you know, I don't know if you can give us a typical week, but just describe some of your routine activities.
Well, it's all from, you know, just observing the animals, making sure they're healthy, making sure there's no problems. We have actually several that are pregnant right now, so making sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing and nutrition is appropriate for their growth. And then when I'm not doing that, I'm sitting at my desk emailing and meetings and going here, going there, meeting with people at the Smithsonian and talking to other managers, getting genetics organized. So, you know, we need this animal from you. You need this animal from us, and just getting all of that organized, health certificates, transportation. Like you say, definitely wear a lot of hats,
but it keeps it exciting. I mean, you can't ever complain about being bored.
Absolutely. No, never.
What about, for Wildlife Conservation Center, what sort of funding, you know, do you get? I mean, are you always looking for funding? Do you have a good stream of funding? I mean, are you involved with the fundraising at all, or is that something you don't have to deal with?
All of the above. We're I shouldn't say always looking for funding, but you know, that is certainly something as a nonprofit that I think any nonprofit is always looking for. We do have a grant writer and, you know, foundation seeker that works with us, and she's very good. We've had a few fundings over the last year or two. One was actually from Dave Matthews, BAML Works, and that was nice to help finish up a barn for the bongo. We certainly take in private donations, foundations, individuals. We're actually on Amazon Smile. So there's lots of sources out there.
Yeah. Having
and we're always looking.
Having a grant writer or a grants person, that is invaluable. So that's wonderful that you have that. And this sort of ties into my question about people that want to support your work. So why don't we go ahead and plug that? Why don't you tell us where people can find you online, the Wildlife Conservation Center, and then also if people want to get involved or to contribute, what are some suggestions?
Well, we are definitely online. It's wildlifeconservationcenter.org. We're also on Facebook. So any Facebook likes definitely help get us, get our name out there. Public awareness, certainly. I think people can help any way they can. So locally, internationally, to donating financially, volunteering your time, come get your boots and come build a fence, you know, from one extreme to the other. Get your hands dirty. You certainly can. There's courses offered internships, externships, things like that, to help out other facilities if you're not near us or, any of that involvement will definitely help conservation and public awareness and education is where it starts.
Mm-hmm. So you do have externships.
We certainly have volunteer opportunities. I think there's a little blurb about it on the website, sending emails, requests and things like that. Haven't gotten official externships yet here, but I think that is something in the near future that we're going to create. But definitely volunteer opportunities.
Yeah.
We're always building, always working. Always feeding. So definitely, definitely things to do.
And mention where you're located again.
We are in Central Virginia in Arrington. So between Charlottesville and Lynchburg.
Oh, beautiful.
Probably about 2.5 hours. Yeah. Right in the middle of the mountains.
Yeah. Oh, that's really nice. I'll have to plan a visit then because if we're moving out there, we want to spend a lot of time out, in Shenandoah. So, may not be too far.
Oh, okay. Yep. Nope, not at all.
So you're also thinking that you're not finished yet, right? You're planning to pursue a PhD in conservation genetics. I know our education is truly never finished.
It's not.
So you mentioned you want to pursue a PhD with the Smithsonian Conservation Biological Institute. So if you can just mention sort of who they are and what they do and talk about what the PhD might entail, and then where would you hope to see yourself after completing the PhD?
Sure. So I've... actually have meetings with them next week. The Smithsonian Conservation Biological Institute is in Front Royal, Virginia, and they are the research aspect of the Smithsonian's National Zoo, which is in D.C. So they do very similar to what we do. They do a little bit more of the endocrinology and reproduction for reintroductions and conservation of several species, ungulates, a lot of feline species, clouded leopards, and wolf species as well. They work on the genomics of these species as well, which is where I come in, hopefully. I've been talking with several of the geneticists from the National Zoo and SCBI, and hopefully we'll be doing my PhD research with them on some of these ungulate species. They're working on several genomes and other things right now, too, just to create these sustainable populations and improve genetic diversity. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So good luck with that. Go ahead. So after the
PhD. And where do I see myself? Yeah. Yeah, it is just more of the same, just, you know, continuing on a genetic research and improving these sustainable populations, whether it be the wild populations or captive populations for the wild for furry introduction. But I hope to continue on with that and make my contribution.
Yep. And you probably would continue with the Wildlife Conservation Center.
Absolutely. Yeah. When in collaboration with the Smithsonian and several of these others, there's a group called Conservation Centers for Species Survival, which is a collaborative group formed by these like-minded institutions like Smithsonian, White Oak, the Wilds in Ohio, and Fossil Rim out in Texas. And their main goal is this herd health or herd source population. So they've created a source population alliance with some of the private landowners, especially in Texas, because there's more animals in captivity in Texas and there are some of the species in the wild. And they're trying to create this population that they can grow from and create the genetic diversity mm-hmm. for reintroductions. So I definitely would love to be involved with that.
Yeah, a good friend of mine is a wildlife vet in South Africa, and she has a rhino orphanage and sanctuary there. But one of her big dreams is to create very large scale, ecologically viable sanctuaries for rhino, but also for other species. You know, just again to keep it. Sort of ecologically sure. balanced, but she looked at Texas because I know there are some, one project in particular that's been, importing rhino, you know, for safekeeping.
Right.
It's really interesting.
And right.
It's very large scale. You know, I think, Texas has a lot of land and some of the browses is favorable for these species. So that's a plus.
Yep. Yeah. We've been talking, like I said earlier, talking with several of the ranchers out there, and they have been working with or trying to work with the South African government to create a safe population here in the U.S., which would be wonderful and would love to take part in that.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to keep up with you and see what happens. So is there anything else?
Definitely.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with the audience today before we finish up?
Well, if you're definitely interested in conservation, do not be afraid to go for it. There's all aspects that you can get involved with, from talking with public to working with animals, being a veterinarian. You don't have to be a veterinarian. There's so many paths you can take. Unfortunately, everybody thinks, oh, I have to be a veterinarian, then I do an internship, then I do a residency. It doesn't have to go that way. Mm-hmm. I'm proof. send those emails out, you know, for every, you know, five no's, you'll get a yes. So, you know, definitely go for it.
Yeah, it's probably good to point out, expect some no's. You know, that's the only way you're going to find success is to weed through those, you know, so-called failures. But yeah, you just got to be persistent. That's for sure.
Yep. Perseverance. Absolutely.
So how can people best get in touch?
You're never too old.
No, exactly. Well, there's a lot of vets, I think, a lot of vets do have career transitions where they, you know, start in private practice and small animal, and they have a lot of debt to pay off, but they have a dream. And so, you know, I really admire, I admire people who, you know, take a leap of faith, and it sounds like that's what you did, and look where you're at.
Yes, absolutely. That's right. Exactly. It was definitely worth it.
Yeah.
And I'm keep moving forward.
So how can people best get in touch with you or find you online? Do you prefer email or social media?
Either one. You can get in touch with us either way. We're on way to create an Instagram account and, you know, kind of get us out more involved in the social media aspect. But we're definitely on Facebook, and we definitely have a website, wildlifeconservationcenter.org. You can definitely email us, you know, call. We'll try to get back to you as soon as we can. You know, whether it be the management department or the veterinary department, depending on what you're looking for. But yeah, absolutely. Those are the best ways to get in touch with us.
Okay, great. And I will have links on my website. So once the podcast is out, if you go to my website, you'll be able to find a link to Wildlife Conservation Center so they can find you.
Awesome. Great.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Karen. I know you're busy, so I appreciate your time, and I look forward to following along. So I wish you all the best in the PhD and continued success with the Wildlife Conservation Center.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm glad to talk about it anytime. It's definitely a passion of mine. I think both of us.
Oh, yeah, for sure. All right. Thank you and take care.
Thank you.
That's it for today's show. Thanks for joining me. And remember, you can get in touch with me anytime via email at Haley@drhaleyadams.com. You can follow me on social media at Dr. Haley Adams. And if you have an idea for a guest you'd like to hear on the show, just let me know. I'd love to interview a conservationist who needs to be heard. So have a great weekend, guys. I'll chat with you soon.